Hey folks, before we get into today's podcast, I wanted to let you know about our upcoming QCon software development conferences. We will be back in person at QCon London this April 4 to 6 and online with the QCon Plus May 10 to 20. Join the world's most innovative senior software engineers across multiple domains in person and online as they share their real-world implementation of emerging trends and practices. You can learn more about the events at qconferences.com. We hope to see you there. Good day, folks. This is Shane Hastie for the InfoQ Engineering Culture Podcast. Today, I'm sitting down across the miles with Robin Purohit of Paratus.ai. Robin, welcome. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Shane.
So, starting point, I suppose, is who's Robin?
Well, I'm a Canadian-born tech executive that made my way to Silicon Valley a little over 20 years ago and had a career primarily in the software industry as a growth exec and big company exec, but now I'm running an AI startup, Paratus.ai.
And the reason we're talking today is about developer communities. So what's going on with developer communities?
Yeah, so this is the entire focus of our company. We're essentially a machine learning platform for community-led growth. So you think of any kind of developer-led business or developer-first business, they're all trying to engage developers on their buying cycle from discovery to evaluation to ultimately production rollout and success. And we know developers go to a myriad of communities to get experts from people that they view they can trust to just get unblocked on that journey. Yeah. And so what we've been doing is we've been analyzing, well, what the heck's going on in all these places? Which ones are good, which ones are not? And how do we help companies do that better?
What makes a good community?
Well, first and foremost, it's a lot of engagement from everybody helping each other. So that's kind of a cultural thing that you see, particularly in open source industries, but also increasingly now in the API industry. So you know, when there's a gathering place where people feel like they can safely ask a question and get help from each other, it kind of creates a virtuous circle of more and more people wanting to be helpful. And those are the ones that we see are the ones that are most successful over time.
I love the idea of that virtuous circle. But a lot of these communities have a pretty nasty reputation for treating new people fiercely, at least.
Yes. There's a huge intimidation factor. So that's one of the, I'd say, unfortunate and bizarre things about communities. Some are very open and friendly. But, you know, what I've heard is that Discord, which has become the hot one, a hot communication channel, is kind of turning nasty. It's almost like Twitter for gamers and coders. And so people are starting to shy away from that as a place to actually learn something. Unfortunately, Stack Overflow, as amazingly successful as that platform is, depending on the moderator, which is nominated by the community, it can get a hostile tone. So if you talk to the Stack Overflow folks, what they'll say is that it's probably 70, 80% of people who only ever view something there because they're so afraid to actually ask a question. Yeah, so I think that has to change. And I think that's why people go to other places as well to go more freely share and discuss things.
You mentioned you've done research into this and benchmarks and so forth. What were you finding in that research?
It was a little surprising to me, to be honest. So we benchmarked probably 50 or 60 vendor communities, ranging from pure open source to, you know, enterprise tech vendors, to see what was going on. And, you know, in general, we found is that only 30% of the questions were answered ever. And only 20% of questions were answered in the first 24 hours, but it's really important to somebody. You know, God forbid they're having some outage problem and they need help. But you know, even just if you're doing your work, you want a quick answer and just get unblocked and move on. Yeah. The other interesting thing, there is a huge variance by communities on how many people were actually contributing to answers. So we looked at how many people are actually answering 80% of the questions, right? So on average, it turned out magically 20% of the people are answering 80% of questions. It's kind of like the Pareto principle, but the data actually shows that. The awesome ones, like the NGINX one is really awesome, is the flip, 80% of the people are actually answering questions. So I think there's some something to be said about the culture of that NGINX community of really, you know, wanting to be helpful to each other.
So if I'm trying to build, lead, guide a community, whether it's within my own organization or in a bigger group, How do I make sure that I get this safety and maintain that culture?
Part of it is making sure you nominate or staff great moderators. Now, there's an art form to being encouraging, but also staying disciplined on the right things being discussed on the right channel or part of the community. So, you know, the people part of it is always the most important because they're the ones that are going to create that culture every day. The second is just awesome content. You know, I think the more content you have that is easily usable by the community in those discussions and findable, the better. The more you are updating content that's kind of addressing the issue of the day, the more valuable that community gets. And quite frankly, most of it's about peer-to-peer help, right? So if you're trying to help somebody else, you want to be able to make sure you have the latest information so that you can put it in your answer, your recommendation to somebody. So these are all things that kind of create that virtuous circle, at least in my view.
And you mentioned some of the stuff about what to avoid. How do we manage, stamp on, avoid the hard stuff, the bad stuff?
We have a technology answer to that problem that we provide. But I think in general, if you're a moderator, you want to be monitoring for negative sentiment, right? Assuming you pick a good moderator, moderators also going to be looking at things to make sure the tone stays, you know, constructive and helpful. And we actually, there's one of the little pieces of machine learning magic we provide is we actually help you classify groups of conversations that have negative sentiment or brewing frustration. And so you can mobilize on them, you know, with either a personal intervention or, you know, getting these people unblocked with a new piece of content or something. So that's one way. So it's a very manual exercise. And I think what we hear is that because there's been an explosion of number of ways that communities can gather, like it's GitHub, yes, it's Stack Overflow, yes, but it's also vendor discourse forums usually, or Lithium forums. It's Reddit and subreddits that are specialized in a topic. There's a ton of Slack out there. So there's probably, I've talked to some of our customers and they have 10 different community channels. So the challenge of having good moderators that have the time to monitor all these different places, you know, even just for tone of conversation and being helpful is tough enough, but then making sure people are actually getting the help they need is even more challenging because there's not that many technical people that are experts, right?
Yeah. What I'm hearing is moderation is a more than full-time role.
Exactly. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's also the most short-staffed role. You talk to all these community managers or DevRel teams is that they're really running their efforts on a shoestring budget. And it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. So they need more automated ways to find these things and scale their impact.
That does lead us to how does AI help?
Yeah. So what is AI good at? So this is my first AI startup, although I've advised a few in my career. AI is really good at solving problems where there's a heck of a lot of data and a lot of interaction with the data. So one of the reasons my instinct was to attack this market with AI solution was there's like over 26 million developers, probably more, but that's the official number that's bandied about, communicating on, you know, hundreds and hundreds of forums and thousands of Slack channels and subreddit groups. So there's so much data to look at and mine to, you know, apply machine learning to define things like sentiment, similar questions, use cutting edge natural language processing to actually help synthesize and put answers back in people's hands quickly. So this is an ideal problem actually for machine learning and natural language processing.
And how have, through your organization, through the work that you've done, how have you set this up? How have you made it happen?
Yeah. So first, foundationally, to crack this problem, we have to build a machine learning engine that can ingest all of these conversations along with the content for developers into a big engine in the cloud. So where we spend a lot of our energy in the early days is getting a data pipeline that knows how to talk to all these different forums, public and private, and different document types, and bring them all into our cloud engine and make sense of them. And once we have that there, then we constantly train it based on how we see interactions from developers and users on that data. So that's foundational. And then you want to build something useful on top of that. Right? Data is good, but it's necessary, but it's not the answer. So there's two things that we found are really valuable. One is you want to help the businesses analyze this data. So who's getting stuck where and why? And how do you remedy that? How are your metrics trending? So is the level of engagement going up? The level of people helping each other going up or down? And on which of these various communities is that happening? And then the second thing we do is we just help automate self-service. There's so many questions that are asked over and over again in different places, maybe in a different way, slightly different way, but very similar. So that's a huge opportunity for machine learning to help. So those are the two primary ways, analytics for the businesses and self-service for the developers, and make that experience common across all those communities.
And how do you avoid the pitfalls of AI, of the bias that's built in, the, I would imagine in this case, the one solution repeated over and over, or those sort of things?
Yeah. I mean, the good news, because of the problem that we're trying to solve, we don't have to struggle with the ethical challenge of racial bias or gender bias. We do look a lot at who's authored content and who's authored responses, because over time we build profiles of, hey, this individual has shown that he or she, whatever pronoun they choose to use, how good are they at addressing people's questions on this topic? So we develop a ranking and a score of those. And then we use that to actually amplify the best recommendations we could provide back to people. So it's very much a meritocracy, the way we apply AI to this problem set, that takes all of those other ethical things out of the way. Yeah. So that's at least one angle. I think then you look at it more holistically, when we try to engage in these developer communities, most businesses have understood that the developers are going to make their own decisions, right? This is an influence game, not a selling and marketing game. So the more insights they have on where people are getting stuck, what they love, how to amplify all of that, it is kind of like an influence marketing engine for developers, is what all these companies really need. It's not another CRM. It's more like a beneficial version of Instagram for the developer at large.
You mentioned the myriad of channels. How do we start to make sense of that?
I think the cat's out of the bag, Shane. I think given how organic these things work, like every year we'll have another explosive communication channel, that people will gravitate to. I think unfortunate reality is it's always going to be many. And people may shift to one or the other depending on the experience they get. So typically what we see at open source company, if you go back to even API companies, they all start on GitHub, right? They post their stuff on GitHub and get engagement in their first batch of users. And then if it's successful, something pops up on Stack Overflow for their product, or usually in the form of tags associated with their product. And then as things grow, they want to start communicating much more real time with people. And so Slack starts to get used a lot. And so it just builds and builds and builds, And so I think we're stuck with many. And every time I turned around, I was so shocked this year that all of a sudden, but Reddit has become like an explosive area for technical conversations. When we started this journey a year and a half ago, we very rarely heard that. So I'm sure next year it'll be another one. And so the problem we try to help solve is, okay, if you're a developer, how the heck do you find where to go? Do you need to care, or can you bring all of that to wherever you're asking your question on that day in that moment? And if you're a business, how do you engage at scale across all these places, some of which you might own as your sponsored properties, but many of which may be public discussion boards or forums you don't own or don't moderate?
Getting into moderation and curation. So AI helping, but how much active curation should be done on content in these communities?
Yeah, I think there's a huge opportunity, and certainly something we're focused on, making the content useful. Like the only thing that matters in the developer journey is the content useful, because this audience, probably many of which are listening to this podcast, have no time for marketing or things that hide the facts they need to get the job done. So the good thing is that you can measure usefulness really easy, right? Because people see something again, they refer to it in posts of their own, it gets more downloads. There's lots of metrics that measure usefulness. And using more advanced AI techniques, you can detect questions that are cropping up or trending that clearly are not being addressed by content, because people are looking at content and they're moving on or ask the question over and over again. So you can measure it and you can detect gaps pretty quickly. And ultimately, you can find out whether you've solved that problem if the trend lines start to go down. And again, it's all about the effectiveness of the content. The thing I also want to say is that I've said the word journey a couple of times. It's probably very familiar to your audience, is that there's many different kinds of questions people have, right? So in the beginning, you're trying to just discover what kind of options do I have, who supplies what. Then you are evaluating and comparing and contrasting. then you're actually actively prototyping and kicking the tires, usually with a combination of, you know, dozens of other technologies. And then you get to build, deploy, and scale. And so the nature of the questions that you're and the help you need will vary depending on where you are on that journey.
And again, thinking from the point of view of the person trying to build, support, and maintain this type of community and to access it, how do I hear the weak signals?
What do you mean by weak signals?
The things that are coming down the line that are not there yet, but they're starting to bubble up. Yeah. What's next?
Yeah, so I'll just give you an example of what we built to try to be helpful. But it's something called hotspotting, which is very well understood in the support universe. So hotspotting is, you know, analyzing a chunk of data to understand where is there a pattern that's emerging, kind of like a heat map or a weather map. And so you're always looking for those early indicators. Hey, there's something that is trending up and with a lot of frustrating tone or sentiment and a lot of people that are engaged in this conversation. So we actually try to identify that in real time across all of these community channels of conversation and then allow people to mine down through that, saying, okay, what's really happening? Who's saying what? Who's participating? And by the way, who should be participating? As I said before, we try to focus on who are the people that are good at these kinds of topics. So because of that, we like to try to show is that, hey, here's 20 people who should be engaged and only 3 are. So you might want to nudge these folks, whether they work for you or just are active in the community, to get on this one so we can prevent this from boiling over.
So Slack is the community we all love to hate. There is so many Slack channels today. Yeah. I know that you said you've been doing some stuff around that. Tell us a little bit about it.
Just talk a little bit about the chaos. So I call it Slack sprawl. You know, it's essentially free to start a new Slack channel or workspace. Even in one workspace, the channels pop up. Even my own company, we basically run our business on Slack, and you know, I can't keep track of the ones. So I think we all have seen that problem. The other problem, an interesting nuance about Slack, is it's not accessible to Google search. Right. So where's the first thing you do when you're looking for help? You go to Google and type a phrase or keywords. You're not going to see those Slack archives on Google. So if something good has been said, you know, it's kind of lost knowledge. And then even within Slack, the search of going back through conversation threads is very, very weak. Right. So we've seen it as an ideal opportunity to be helpful and apply, again, our machine learning techniques, because particularly in open source, we've seen huge, huge increase in the use of Slack over the last 2 years in this new remote work reality that we all live in, as well as for DevOps teams, right? And so we apply our capabilities to make all the Slack archives searchable, but also do that across all of the relevant Slack channels or workspaces we can find. So we combine that with all the other stuff we have from community forums and content. And now we have like a constantly refreshing engine that incorporates all the knowledge that's being created in Slack to make it useful. So we released a couple of months ago to build on all of that as an AI assistant for Slack that purely targeted developers and open source communities. So basically, you know, when you ask a question, you can ask our bot and it'll retrieve, here's 5 answers that look like they're very relevant, regardless of where they came from. And by the way, here's 3 people that look like they're very qualified to help you and how you can find them. They might be on this Slack channel, it might be in another Slack or on Stack Overflow. And that's caused a lot of interest, particularly among the open source community. So we're excited to see the response.
What are the trends that you're seeing? Where are we headed with this whole community support, engagement, and so forth? Because as you mentioned, there's been a huge surge over the last couple of years, but I think there's more coming.
Yeah, I think it's very big and booming, and it's only going to get bigger. So there's this great analysis that Tyler Jewell from Dell Technology Capital has published. So he has characterized the size of the developer-first economy, and he's characterized it as $40 billion, growing at 20% year over year. So this is commercial open source, APIs, dev platforms, dev tools. And I think, you know, if you look at the startups that are getting huge valuation and growth right now, the vast majority of them are taking a developer-first approach one way or another. And SaaS companies, every SaaS CEO I know, is opening up their platform, right? Salesforce did that first, but now everybody is doing it. So I think this area is going to explode. And with explosion will come, you know, more conversations and more places. what we think is missing is some way to make sense of this all so you can run your business at scale. I would say that what this industry doesn't need is another CRM, right? Because that's a workflow-oriented approach that's really largely intended at top-down selling. Given this is such a bottoms-up, you know, data-driven and high-volume activity, we think there's room for something new to be created that's, you know, based on machine learning and all this data that can help people automate this engagement with developers wherever they are on the journey from discovery all the way to monetization. So that's our vision. And I think we're the nice thing, we're playing into a lot of tailwinds that'll create a growing opportunity.
Some really interesting points and good observations there, Robin. If people want to continue the conversation, where do they find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I respond to pretty quickly. Just find me at Robin Purohit. If you try me on Twitter, I might be a little slow, unfortunately, but you can find me on Twitter at Robin Purohit 1. And you can definitely check out our website at peritus.ai. We have all sorts of resources and free downloads available.
Thank you so much.
It's been great to talk to you, Shane.